The following program is rated U for universal audiences and is considered suitable for listeners of all ages.
This is a presentation of Dream Realm Enterprises, where dreams are our reality.
Hello and welcome to our fall special of Poet's Passion. I'm your host, Jerry Kokich, and if you're joining us for the first time, this series is about sharing our love of poetry by reading original poems from you, our listeners, and reconnecting with some old favorites. In this episode, we'll be featuring poems with either a winter or a Halloween theme. Our poets include Mike Fox, Ed Chandler, Glenn Hibbert, Joe Thomas, Lisa Michaud, Pete Lutz, and our very own Jonathan Patrick Russell. Our first poem, The Candle, was written and performed by Mike Fox.
He awoke to a shriek in the dead of the night. Alone in his house, he knew something's not right. He reached for the candle, sat alongside his bed, stepped into his slippers, cap snug on his head. The creak of the floor proved loud and unwanted, but the shriek that had followed grew dreary and haunted. As he walked through the hall, the candle flickered dull light, as a bang on the ceiling gave him a quick fright. The man already knew what this was about. The shriek came again, the candle went out. From up the stairwell, he heard a voice say, "You did this to me, you sent me away." With that, his fears were proved to be true. He knew in this moment what he had to do. The whole house now dark, he climbed slowly the stairs, where atop was a room he hasn't opened in years. Ear pressed against, he heard movement with dread. "Open up, Daddy, I want to play dead." He relit the candle, then opened the door, saw his long-dead daughter sprawled out on the floor. Slowly she rose, decomposing but stout. The door slammed shut, the candle went out.
Your poem was particularly creepy and dark. What inspired you to write it?
Well, honestly, I'm just really into creepy stuff. Horror, you know, scary, demon, all that stuff. I guess that's what inspired me, because I've always been a creepy person. Halloween's just my favorite time of year, all year.
How long have you been writing poetry?
I don't really write poetry per se, but in a sense I did. I grew up writing songs. I come from a musical background. I play drums and guitar and sing and write. Apparently I write songs. I'm just good at rhyming, really, so poems and music have always just came easy to me. But I can't write a novel or any kind of book to save my life. I've written, I think, maybe 7 complete pages, and then I just stop and get uninterested. So short poems and songs and stuff are the way to go for me.
What roles do you enjoy playing the most within the voice acting community?
Joker would be my all-time favorite thing, the voice. I just want to do it so bad. I think I'd have a really good Joker, but I just like that serial killer, just creepy vibe or not. But I'll take on any role, honestly. I mean, I love the dramatic stuff, obviously, because I like horror, but I love comedic stuff as well, who doesn't like to laugh? So I think that I would just do anything, honestly, any kind of role, but of course the creepy stuff.
Our next poem, Boo, was written by Ed Chandler and performed by John Lingard.
The door creaks slowly open. Eerie footsteps crossed the floor. A chill went down my spine. An evil, dark voice whispered,
"I can see you. The cat ran for it as a vase flew across the room and the dog whimpered. A ghostly presence emerged. A tormented figure, a forgotten soul. The dead had risen with zombie flesh and red eyes glowing. A ghoulish black veil was flowing. The wind howled. The fog choked the house. When all of a sudden there came a cry of pain. Tormented by the rain, we were stricken and stranded inside. My niece ran around, terrified, looking for refuge. As the monster approached, we retreated to the living room. We sat safely on the sofa, but the lights flickered. Grasping a cushion, we shivered in fear. The moaning terror, uncanny, creeping things, paranormal occurrences. A crash of drums and a rumble of thunder. Terrified, we looked out from behind the cushion and... It was only little Charlie, dressed in a white pillowcase. He was off on a fright night of terror, playing ghostly games. So, don't have nightmares, will you?
What type of roles do you enjoy playing the most within the voice acting community? And do you have a favorite among them?
Basically, anything that I'm fortunate enough to be cast in. But I suppose if you want to pin it down any more, I do enjoy playing villains. The guy who twiddles his mustache as he ties the heroine onto the railroad tracks. That kind of thing.
I could tell you had a blast mixing the sound effects within your performance of Chandler's poem. Have you ever produced a full-scale audio drama production?
No, I've never actually produced a full-scale audio drama. I've done some small-scale ones, two and three-handers, but never anything that has run for more than... 10 minutes, I think, is about the longest piece that I've actually done. I've got some ideas, but like many things in life, they've never actually come to fruition.
Do you have a dream role you would love to play?
I'd love to play Dr. Watson in a Sherlock Holmes story. Basically, because I've written a couple.
Glenn Hibbert performs his poem, Winter.
Winter. An original poem by G.M. Hibbert, written October 2008. Winter. Bitter winter. Frosty white mornings and rain as a border, stiff streak of water and icy splinter. Winter, enter winter. Fresh autumn leaf begin to wither, cold glacial weather is winner. Ray of sunlight, where art thou? Am answered by a draughty howl. Winter, biting winter. Winterland swallows summer hinterland, snowy sleet steals away the heat. Winter. Middle winter, cruelest part of year, a chilly lair, frigid air, leads you to its frozen snare. Ray of sunlight, where art thou? Am scalded by a blustery scowl. Winter, smiting winter, come, O spring, step in the ring, season of spring, deliver us.
You used a lot of imagery within your poem, indicating that winter may not be your favorite season. What inspired you to write about winter in that way?
Actually, I don't mind winter so much at all.
After all, in winter, I can just put more clothes on and switch on the heater or light a fire to keep yourself warm. Summer, on the other hand, is a little bit more tricky. There's only so many clothes you can disrobe before going out in public, and even then, if you're brave enough, you'd like to get rid of the rest of them and... No. In fact, look, if it started to rain, I would stop whatever I'm doing, including this recording, get up off my chair, go to the door, open it up, and just smell the freshness that comes with the rain. Oh, I love that scent. However, if my flatmate happened to be in the same room and it started to rain, she would just go off saying, "Ah, oh, it's raining again, I hate the rain." And I just try to explain to her, look, without the rain, we wouldn't enjoy the sunny days. No, that doesn't fly with her. In fact, she flew this year just before the whole COVID lockdown thing to Australia to escape a New Zealand winter. No, it's not that I don't like winter or I've had some erroneous experience with the season. It's more to do with the words in the poem. I love to play with words. I mean, winter itself is quite a cold word. It's sharp. Winter. It just screams, do a poem with me. Using other words that are equally harsh, like bitter, like biting, you know, all those wonderful things. Then I guess accompanying those more harsher words with less harsh yet still have the same weight when it comes to feeling the cold, like chilly, like lair and, you know, snare. Words like frigid and frozen are just wonderful examples of other words that may not be quite as harsh, but still sends a shiver down your spine. And that's really what I wanted to do. And just really have fun with creating pictures out of these words that may not necessarily be extraordinary on their own.
How long have you been writing poetry, and do you have a favorite poem?
It's been something I've done on and off through the years since about 17. And if I'm honest, my first attempts were pretty terrible. If we ever have a show of the worst poems you've ever written, I would have a few of those to share. Nowadays, when I have done everything else that I want to do, any other kinds of writing that I'm doing, which could be prose or it could be writing scripts and all that sort of thing, if I sort of have a spare moment or I've been in deep thought about something, I need some sort of outlet, then I might sit and write something out. My favorite poem. Well, you know, they have all their special qualities. It could have something to do with what I was feeling at the time of the writing of that poem, and because I was able to just simply sit there and get rid of that feeling through poem, then that becomes a favorite poem, because it's alleviated something from off my shoulders. Another sort of favorite poem would be, and I don't know if you've shared this poem on the program, called Only Two. I was part of an online community called WeBook, which was absolutely wonderful. It's been disbanded now, which is a real shame, but it was a place where writers of any age, of any creed, of any genre, style, could come together and just write stuff and get feedback. And I joined a couple of poetry groups. And on one of these platforms, there was a challenge to write a poem consisting of each line in it being only two words long. I just wanted to excel myself in that and not only just write a poem that has two words in each line, but shape the whole entire poem into the form of the number two. And so that's a favorite poem because it was an exercise that I wanted to challenge myself in and successfully pull it off. And then another favorite poem would be, you know, ones that just look good and sound good and bring across a powerful message simply and effectively. So there are all sorts of favorite poems. Please don't ask me to name the titles of those poems. I got this terrible habit of writing something and then instantly forgetting about it until I see it again. Which is nice, because I go back through my poems and I'm surprised by some stuff that I've written, and if I had not forgotten it, then I wouldn't be surprised. So that's another form of favorite poem. Those ones that surprise me. Did I really write that? Oh my goodness.
You're also in the voice acting community. What are some roles you've played, and which one is your favorite?
Now, I had to do a little bit of research on this, and it so happened that a little while ago I wrote my voice work experience out on a spreadsheet by going back and reading very old emails. And it's just as well I love this hobby, because I tried out unsuccessfully 17 times for roles before I landed my first ever character with someone who, at the time, I believe was called Rachel Rumler?
Way back in late July, early August 2012.
Then, after something called Evening Primrose, 3 years later, I first worked with... Can I answer this question slightly differently? When I look back at the past, it's not so much the roles that are my fondest memory or favourite things about this great hobby of ours, and that's probably, if I'm honest, in part to the fact that, with the exception of a couple of roles, I generally had small and extra parts, and I would never knock those characters or demeanour them, because they are all part of this fabulous ticking clock that is audio drama. What I remember really are the people who I worked with on these parts. And you, Rach, are one of those wonderful people I don't forget. 3 years after Wisps of Memory, I worked with both our dear lost friends Jeff Niles and Victor Aurelius under the 4077 and All Better Audio Production Companies on Lance Hartwig Mysteries as Lieutenant Fox. I barely remember Lieutenant Fox, but I shall never, ever forget Jeff and Victor. And those two wonderful men then put me onto another wonderful man, Jonathan Patrick Russell, and there I scored my first couple of roles in Robots of the Company. And you know, it is the people I have worked with, and hopefully do so again, that I remember most. But if I had to pick a couple of characters, yeah, there's a few that come to mind. Tree and Cow. Colin McRoberts' Baba Yaga Saga, they were a joy to play back in January 2013, followed by a small part in A.J. Clarkson and G. Jansen Woodard's The Blackburn Gaslight Adventures Arc 2. I just loved performing in that wonderful era as Thomas Brooke, but I really, really enjoyed playing Garva in Jonathan's Robots of the Company, episodes 77 and 78, Secrets of the Lost Planet, because Garva was an eternal optimist, so full of joy and hope and love for life, over-exaggerated and over-ecstatic, but such a pleasure to play. And more recently for ROC, quite a wonderful little character called Wiz the Bartender. On the darker genre, I have had the opportunity to sink my teeth into the spirit of a serial killer called Hatch in Daniel Schuritz's horror Black Jack. But you know, I can't leave this interview without talking about Charles Snell, because, dear Rachel, he does have a special place in my heart, as do you, because he was the very first voice acting role that I got, and because of the faith and trust you had in me to play the part without knowing me from a bar of soap to carry an entire show, quite frankly, I was blown away. But what a wonderful role. There was great depth to Charles. He was a writer, and I instantly related to him. I could really get into his head. There was such wonderful emotions to explore through Snell. Fear, love, hope, and pain. So those are just some of the favourites that I have in this wonderful, wonderful hobby of ours, audio drama.
Joe J. Thomas presents his three poems, Moosferatu, Motion and Stillness, and Unspoken Horror.
Gather round, my calves, and you shall hear a chilling tale of dread and fear. When day turns to night, and you hear a deep moo, outside in the dark roams Moosferatu. He walks through the bog with his antlers aglow, a frightening sight that few shall dare know. For those who aren't careful, he jumps from the trees. They shout in sheer terror and fall to their knees. Above all, he looms 7 feet at the shoulder. Just seeing his shadow will make you feel colder. The wings on his back, sharp fangs in his mouth, there's no use in running to the north or the south. If Lady Luck stands by you this winter's night, perhaps you'll escape the horrible sight. Some say he's a myth, a legend or lore. They whisper it quietly while barring the door. So when you go out in winter's cold chill, be certain you are wary behind every hill. Keep to the highlands, don't go down below, or risk Moosferatu's dark, mournful low.
Sunlight moves to the earth. Water moves from root to stem to leaf. Livestock move to graze. Food is transported from farm to store to table. Motion is life. And yet, when there is no motion, calm, silence, space. As the blank spaces define the letters on the page, the pauses say as much as the words. Stillness is essential. Balance is key.
Your poem, Moosferatu, has a very fun, childlike quality, reminiscent of Dr. Seuss. Would you say his work inspired you to write it?
I think the inspiration for Moosferatu came from an article I'd read about vampire cows or vampire sheep, and I realized I'd never heard of a vampire moose. And then the name Moosferatu came into my head. But I really like Dr. Seuss's work, and especially Boris Karloff's reading of Dr. Seuss. Just the voice and the meter seem to go well together.
How long have you been writing poetry, and what is your favorite genre or style to write in?
I've been writing poetry for, well, consistently for about 10 years, since I started Joe's Dump. And Joe's Dump came out of complete and utter boredom, and I just wanted to do something creative. So I forced myself to do something creative every week on Monday. Since then, it's become more random, which kind of fits in with Joe's Dump anyway.
You're also part of the voice acting community. Can you tell us about some of the roles you've performed for other producers and what your favorite role was?
On the voice acting front, I've done quite a bit of games and anime. That's probably what I'm most known for. Roles like the Skeleton King in Diablo 3, or several of the main bosses in World of Warcraft. Even some famous people like Lex Luthor in a reboot of Mortal Kombat, and Professor X in a live Marvel stage show. They used a voiceover track for that. On the anime side, I've been in Bleach and Monster and Durarara and a few other notable things. I think my favorite role is actually from a Japanese video game called Tales of Vesperia, where I'm Raven, just because Raven turned out to be pretty close to my personality, kind of jokey, strange, weird old man that people know. For audio drama work, I'm probably most known for my work with Dream Realm Entertainment, Robots of the Company. I'm Putch and Lovely in that. And then some of the Doctor Who work in various groups. And I'm also the trailer announcer on Pendant Productions.
And now we'll hear from Lisa Michaud with two of her poems, Snow Stopping and Bog Trail.
A quick story about this poem. It's an Elizabethan sonnet that I wrote as a freshman in college a very long time ago, after a very special night walking out on the snow with a person that I cared about very much. And it's called Snow Stomping. Snow Stomping. If wind could blow much colder, we'd have froze, too spellbound to be reached by common sense, ignoring chilled white hands and numbing toes, and hushed to silence by an air so dense each step was all we heard. Each print we made would further our haphazard tracks, which marred the virgin field. We forged two paths and bade them to lie straight beneath a night so starred and moonlit it seemed almost day. We failed, too drunk upon the love between us two to walk in lines upon an earth that paled with snow. 3 hours thus spent, our night was through. Then later, I would pause in pensive thought upon what snow and youth and love had wrought. The following poem was something I wrote this year, and it has to do with the hike that I went on with my children, who are now teenagers, but still somewhat boisterous on the trail. And it's about my gratefulness that spending time in the woods brings me so much peace. And it's called The Bog Trail. The Bog Trail. We took the winding trail near end of day that snaked its curving way to water's edge, then veered into the deeper woods and back. I walked ahead to catch the lesser sounds of birds and wind and leaves, my own footfalls away from noisy children's guessing games, and caught the slanting light of afternoon in outspread hands and fingers, drinking warmth that spilled in golden streams from leafy tears to dappled puddles on the path below. The softer earth beneath my feet gave hints of pillowed orange needles, crushed beneath by years and years of other trotting feet. The way turned back again to open space, and we caught sight of 7 soaring pairs of wings that banked and braked, that set upon the water's surface in a rush and splash. The geese forged ripples, swimming past to find a dinner from the grass at water's edge. The sun sank lower still and turned our steps, retracing up around the bends toward camp. The light would start to fail before we reached the end. The peaceful close of day was just what I had needed then to set aside my world of work and emails full of stress, to rest my mind, recharge my solar cells in that best light of day, the last light that casts the longest shadows and then subsides with day, with thoughts, with worries put aside, in peace, the growing dark subsides tonight.
What inspires you to write poetry?
Well, I think that is an answer that has changed a lot over the years. I wrote an enormous amount of poetry in high school, and I think it was mostly an outlet for expressing just how dark and tortured my soul was. There's a lot of poetry about being unlucky in love, and a lot of it is really cringeworthy right now when I look back on it. And I think that mutated in college to be more about trying to play with form. So once I got into college and I started studying English literature and poetry forms and meters and whatnot, I think a lot of my poetry was much more of an exercise in the mechanics than necessarily me trying to express some deep emotional content. And, you know, I go through phases where I don't write any poetry for long, long periods. And I've been trying to get back into it now as a way to express some of the things that, I guess, moments. It's a way, rather than writing fiction, which I also do, it's a way to try to capture a moment rather than an entire story. And I think that's what appeals to me now. And I try to do that. And I try to tackle that as a smaller writing project than putting together a story, because my short stories end up becoming novels. I don't have short ways of telling stories, just like I don't have short ways of answering questions.
You're also part of the voice acting community. Tell us about some of your favorite roles.
In the voice acting community, I have had a lot of small roles, and I really appreciate any time I actually can get on any kind of cast. But the ones that I've enjoyed the most are the ones when I can actually get some meat behind them. And I think it's really funny that I've been keeping a list of the roles that I've had, and I have a little highlight section, which is the stuff that is where I've had a much bigger part. And for some reason, they always end up getting released right around my birthday in late April, which I think is a nice birthday present from the voice acting community to me, that I get to do something where I really get to stretch. My first role that I really enjoyed was in an audio drama that never got completed. And this was one of my earlier parts where I got to play a Vorta in a Star Trek drama. And one of the things I liked about that, of course, is that the Vorta are pretty darn evil, but they're very, very nice about being evil. So you get to do an over-the-top, pleasant, with evil undertones voice. And I remember my kids hearing it and at first not realizing that it was me, and then saying, "Mom, you sound so evil." And that was really exciting to know that I'd managed to do that to the point where, like I said, they didn't realize that it was actually my voice. And I really am sorry that story stopped after two episodes, because I really wanted to see it through to the end, and the other actors in that group were fantastic. I also got to have a part in Magic Monsters and Mayhem, or I have a part. I guess my character is going to eventually be moving on, but in Dream Realm Enterprises Magic Monsters and Mayhem, I started out as a bit part. I was the wife of somebody, of a noble living in the forest, and for the first few episodes, all I was doing was serving food to the people who came to visit him, and so all of the things I said were basically accepting compliments on my cooking. But then Jonathan decided to make me much more interesting, and he started throwing all sorts of backstory, and I got to be involved in a torrid affair, and the last few scenes that I have recorded for Lady Denora have been absolutely full of drama and scenery chewing and just so much fun to do, because it was such a lovely flowering of that character into something more interesting. And I also had a lot of fun just now recording a part for Pendant Audio for a seminar. This was the next one, the next thing that will come out for my birthday in April of next year. And that part is I'm playing the tutor of a young sorceress. And it's a no-nonsense, I'm not going to sugarcoat things part. And it's just so much fun to combine the sort of sarcasm and the genuine fondness that she has with the character. So she's just one of those sort of grouchy but kind of soft underneath people. And that, again, there were layers to that, and that was a lot of fun to get into.
Do you have a favorite poet?
Okay, favorite poet, rather. That's actually pretty easy to answer, because I'm very, very fond of Robert Frost. And this goes back, this is a family history thing. My mother is always quick to tell everybody about how I memorized Stopping by Woods on a Snowy Evening when I was 3 years old. This was a poem that Mom would always recite whenever we were driving through the woods during the snowy season. And very early in life, I knew it by heart. And in general, I love Robert Frost's ability to capture the feel of the New England woods and the feel of the New England countryside. So he's definitely right up there. From a very different kind of style, I'm also very fond of E.E. Cummings. I love the way that he can take the visual poem and evoke imagery around it. So a lot of that stuff doesn't easily get read aloud, because he's got these poems where you're splitting up words in the middle of the word and stuff. It's much more about seeing it, but at a very fundamental level, it can express so much. And then I guess, I should also mention that because my background is very much including old stuff. So I have an English literature degree, and my focus as an undergrad was very much on the older the better. So I have memorized bits of Chaucer. I've memorized a lot of Shakespeare. And to go even older and older, I've learned Anglo-Saxon and, recited bits of Beowulf in the original and stuff like that. So, but I'm fond of Shakespeare, and I'm fond of making Shakespeare sound modern, because it is, after all, modern English. It's just somewhat archaic in usage. And one of the great pleasures I used to have when I was a computer science professor, which is one of my first career, and I was doing research in the computational processing of human languages. And my research project was actually, at that time, had to do with helping people who were translating from Old English into Modern English. And so I would throw poetry at the audience as part of a presentation about my research, particularly if I was speaking to undergraduates, because I know that so many young adults, they think of Shakespeare as Old English, and they think of how much work it was for them to understand Shakespeare when they had to learn it in school as having to go through this old stuff. And so I would try to shake things up a lot by starting off a computer science lecture by asking them what was Old English and challenging their desire to put Shakespeare into Old English. And then as part of this discussion of what was Old English, what was Middle English, and what was Modern English, I would recite some of Beowulf. I would recite the beginning of the prologue to Chaucer's Canterbury Tales to introduce them to Middle English. And then I would recite one of my favorite Shakespeare sonnets. And I would recite that sonnet in a way that made it so abundantly clear, particularly when you contrast it with the other two examples, that this was modern English. It may have a couple of words or maybe something about the turn of phrase that was a little archaic, but it really was modern English. And then that set the stage for me to explain what we needed to do to help somebody translate from genuinely old English into modern English. And my favorite part about it was not just the fact that I got to recite some of my favorite poetry, but also that I got to turn people's brains inside out because they have an assumption about what computer scientists are and what they do. And I really wanted to say, hey, you know what? You may think that a computer scientist, you know, does just programming and that's, you know, that's what this is, but I want you to understand who I am as a computer scientist. I'm a computational linguist, which means I study how we can look at human language through the lens of computation. And I wanted to make that point because I wanted to shake it up and help them understand that there's so much more to my field than what they, you know, might their preconceptions, and that they may be poetry fanatics and they may find a home in that field as well. So that was, you know, something that I really, really enjoyed, and you know, maybe a little bit of a troublemaker to spend 15 minutes of a research talk reciting poetry, but again, just to make certain that they understood that there was so much more to this field than they were envisioning.
Pete Lutz will now read his poem, A Song of Winter.
In January, I met a girl who loved me true, but made it plain that as long as the snow stayed on the ground, would she remain. The night stayed cold, the snow stayed fast, though of a fire I had no need. While my love stayed, she would my warmth, my fire feed. One morning in March, I woke alone. I knew without looking upon the lawn that spring had come, and like the snow, my love had gone. I do not mourn for you, my love, for with orange and scarlet the leaves all burn, and winter comes, and with the snow, you shall return.
I've had the pleasure of working with Pete Lutz on a couple of projects. Pete, you've really built a presence for yourself in the audio drama community, everything from voice acting, adapting stories for your company, Narada Radio, and creating your own original shows. What would you say is your greatest achievement and why?
Thank you. Thank you. That's very kind of you to say so. My greatest achievement? I haven't done it yet. Don't get me wrong. I've made a lot of productions that I'm very proud of. I've made a lot of productions, period, for that matter, at least a dozen per year over the past 7 years. But I came late to the table. I was 50 when I started making audio dramas on a regular basis, and I could have started much earlier if somebody had sat me down and explained to me that this podcasting thing wasn't going to go away, and it wasn't just a couple of stoners sitting around talking about D&D or slasher movies. So my goal is to keep at this until I'm either deaf or blind or both. There's a story out there that I haven't made yet. It hasn't found me yet. It hasn't slipped into the car and sat next to me and grabbed the steering wheel and kicked me to the back seat. I know that story is out there. This is a very long answer just to say that I haven't reached my pinnacle yet. But if you really want an answer, I think my greatest achievement is creating the Narada Radio Company, bringing dozens and dozens of actors together from various places on this planet that I trust to do a wonderful job, and assigning them their roles based on what I know they're capable of, and maybe, just maybe, providing a sense of personal growth to these actors.
What inspired you to write poetry?
I don't know. I wrote my first poem probably when I was in kindergarten, maybe before. I've always enjoyed slinging words together. In sixth grade, I was writing poetry every day, rhyming couplets about my classmates, things like that. In high school, I was very much into free verse. When I was in the Navy and going through my first divorce, I wrote like a dozen songs, which, as everybody knows, is poetry put to music. I enjoy all kinds of poetry, even though I may not know what they're called. Here's a funny thing. This was on Facebook. A friend who's a terrific poet recently thanked the publisher of a magazine that had accepted his ekphrastic poem, and I had to go look it up. It's a poem about a work of art. And I went, people write poems about works of art? But then I remembered a poem my college instructor had written about visiting a museum and seeing a painting by de Kooning's, so I guess that was an ekphrastic poem. I don't write much poetry these days, though. The one I read for your show was one I wrote for a college poetry course in the 80s. I'm proud to say I got an A in that class.
What is your favorite voice acting role?
I started voice acting for other people's shows shortly after I started making my own audio dramas, and I have created literally hundreds of characters for those producers in the past 7 or so years. So I have a few that stand out for me. Victor Aurelius and Mark Slade made a series maybe 5 or so years ago called The Sundowners, a horror western. And I did a character named Sam Hill, who was a kind of demonic cowboy. He talked a little like this and had an evil chuckle when something horrible was going to go down like this. So that's one. Another was for Tom Parsons' series All's Fair, a short sci-fi series in which I played a character who starts out as a politician who genuinely wants to help his fellow man, but gradually becomes a power-hungry megalomaniac. Making those changes to the character was a wonderful challenge and lots of fun. But I think my most favorite role is one I'd wanted since the 80s, and it's one for my own series, the title character in Adventures of the Federated Tech, based on the Continental Ops stories by Dashiell Hammett. Reading those stories nearly 40 years ago sparked a desire to create that character for an audiobook someday. But, you know, I think I'm making something even better with my audio drama series. It helps that the stories are told in the first person. My adaptations keep as close as possible to the original stories because it's foolish, you know, to try to improve on a writer like Hammett. So I'm doing that narration in an audiobook style, but in the long run, it's a full cast audio drama and very exciting stuff.
Our next poem, called Winter's Night, was written by our very own Jonathan Patrick Russell. The night is cold before the dawn. We huddle together, we fight to hold on. The season brings so much, bringing smiles and fears, hope and yet darkness, laughter and tears. Throughout the night, we wait for the light of day, the end of the long night. During this time, there is brightness of the holiday season, such a thrill it can bring, for so many reasons. For some, it is pure joy. For others, it may depress. For some, it is nostalgia, old traditions redressed. Some may win the battle, and yet some may indeed lose. Many will make it out without those holiday blues. But in the end, when the warmth of light we earn, some will hope and pray for the long winter's night to quickly return. I don't remember the first time I heard 'Twas the Night Before Christmas. It's like I've always known it, and it has always meant Christmas to me. 'Twas the night before Christmas when all through the house not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there. The children were nestled all snug in their beds while visions of sugar plums danced in their heads. And Mama in her kerchief and I in my cap had just settled down for a long winter's nap. When out on the lawn there arose such a clatter, I sprang from the bed to see what was the matter. Away to the window I flew like a flash, tore open the shutters and threw up the sash. The moon on the breast of the new-fallen snow gave the luster of midday to objects below, when what to my wondering eyes should appear but a miniature sleigh and 8 tiny reindeer. With the little old driver so lively and quick, I knew in a moment it must be St. Nick. More rapid than eagles his coursers they came, and he whistled and shouted and called them by name. Now Dasher, now Dancer, now Prancer and Vixen, on Comet, on Cupid, on Donner and Blitzen. To the top of the porch, to the top of the wall, now dash away, dash away, dash away all. As dry leaves that before the wild hurricane fly, when they meet with an obstacle, mount to the sky. So up to the housetop the coursers they flew, with the sleigh full of toys, and St. Nicholas too. And then in a twinkling I heard on the roof the prancing and pawing of each little hoof. As I drew in my hand and was turning around, down the chimney St. Nicholas came with a bound. He was dressed all in fur, from his head to his foot, and his clothes were all tarnished with ashes and soot. A bundle of toys he had flung on his back, and he looked like a peddler just opening his pack. His eyes, how they twinkled! His dimples, how merry! His cheeks were like roses, his nose like a cherry! His droll little mouth was drawn up like a bow, and the beard of his chin was as white as the snow. The stump of a pipe he held tight in his teeth, and the smoke, it encircled his head like a wreath. He had a broad face and a little round belly that shook when he laughed like a bowl full of jelly. He was chubby and plump, a right jolly old elf, and I laughed when I saw him in spite of myself. A wink of his eye and a twist of his head soon gave me to know I had nothing to dread. He spoke not a word, but went straight to his work and filled all the stockings, then turned with a jerk and laying his finger aside of his nose and giving a nod, up the chimney he rose. He sprang to his sleigh, to his team gave a whistle, and away they all flew like the down of a thistle. But I heard him exclaim, ere he drove out of sight, "Happy Christmas to all, and to all a good night." Thank you for joining us for this very special episode of Poets Passion. Our featured poets and performers were Mike Fox, Ed Chandler with his poem performed by John Lingard, Glenn Hibbert, Joe Thomas, Lisa Michaud, Pete Lutz, and Jonathan Patrick Russell. "'Twas the Night Before Christmas" was written by Clement Clark Moore. All poems presented on Poets Passion are copyrighted by the author and may not be reproduced in any way without the expressed permission from the author. The music was by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com. Poets Passion is a Dream Realm Enterprises production produced by Rachel Pulliam. I'm your host, Jerry Kokich, wishing you happy holidays.
This program is copyright 2020 and is brought to you by Dream Realm Enterprises, soaring into new realms.